F1 returns to damp Montreal for the first time since 2019, and while it was Max Verstappen who was the one passing the waves, it was Fernando Alonso who made the biggest splash. Welcome to episode 206 of the Grid Talk podcast. My name is Louis Edwards, and today we are going to be reviewing qualifying for the 2022 Canadian Grand Prix. Joining me today, we have Tom Downey from the Everything F1 podcast.
Hello.
Jared Jacob from the Hit the Apex podcast.
Hey, guys.
And Philip Matthew from the Grid Strip podcast.
Hello. Sorry.
But first, before we start, if you do enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you do, you'll automatically go into our monthly draw to win a Grid Talk t-shirt from our championship range of merch. And if you're one of the 69% of people who aren't yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. So before we get into the qualifying today, of course, a couple of big news points came out today, mostly concerning around Pierre Gasly. So, Tom, Pierre Gasly signed on for another year at AlphaTauri, and I think it's fair to say, not just for people on our podcast, but general fans F1 fans in general, think that maybe it's time Pierre left AlphaTauri, not actually signed another year.
Yeah. Has there been an official press release saying that he has signed? Because the reason I say that is I heard that Franz Tost said it's 100% confirmed that Gasly is going to race for AlphaTauri next year. But also Perez 100% had a contract for Racing Point in 2021. So, presuming he does stay on, and presuming the rumours are, and what Tost said is true. I mean, why would he lie about it? I think for Gasly, I think now that he knows that Red Bull second seat is shut until at least the end of 2024, unless Perez does something, unless he gets dropped from his seat, which, let's be fair, it's not like Red Bull to not do that. I mean, I don't see why they would do it at the minute off sort of current form and results, but I think for Gasly, it's a case of just get his immediate future secured, because everybody sees what he can do in that car. He's very well bedded into that team. They all like him. He gets on very well with the mechanics and his race engineer, all the rest of it. It's a happy environment for him. I wonder if he's almost sort of just thinking about the short term, is in just stay in F1, because he doesn't want to risk having maybe 2 years out or something, or even if it's a year out, that could be very costly. So maybe he's just sort of thinking about his initial future, and then if a seat comes up somewhere else, well, contracts can always be broken. They can always be bought out. They can always be paid off. So if a seat was to come up at, say, McLaren or Mercedes, I think realistically, out of the teams who you'd consider above AlphaTauri, those are probably the two that would come up. You can even call McLaren above them at the minute. I think just because he is set to race there for another year, we don't know how long this supposed contract is. I would imagine it's just a year's contract. So come sort of 9-10 months time, when the F1 merry-go-round is in full swing before the start of the 2023 season, he'll be looking around for what could arguably be called a better seat.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point about the short term, because, Jared, there is quite a lot of uncertainty around some teams. We look at Aston Martin, we look at McLaren. There are teams out there which Pierre Gasly could go to, but at the moment we have no idea. We don't know what Sebastian Vettel's going to do. We don't know what the situation at McLaren with Daniel Ricciardo is right now. Is it just best for him to, save that seat at AlphaTauri? It's a team which is, it's solid enough. It keeps him in a drive and then explore options later on.
Yeah, look, age-wise, he's still got that on his side where he could survive another season at AlphaTauri. Like, ideally, it's not the best thing, but like you say, it depends on what's going on around him at the moment. Obviously, a few races ago, the situation with Ricciardo and McLaren seemed pretty tense, and then after points in Baku, it seemed to have calmed down to the point where Ricciardo during the week, or Zach Brown, I think it was, said that they both sat down and had dinner together and everything. And, you know, obviously he's got a contract, or he's still got a year left on his contract with McLaren. Gasly was one of those names that was suggested that if Ricciardo did leave McLaren, that he would go there potentially, and then also Aston Martin if Sebastian Vettel moves. But I think the next month or two heading into the mid-season break is definitely going to be telling as to what happens. So, like, I agree with Tom as well that there's been no, like, official press release or statement from the team validating that he has a new deal for next year. So I think it could very much change, but at the same time, having that security that, you know, he will be there, be in the same team he's been with for what feels like a million years now, for 2023. It might not be the best seat. Like, they've definitely underperformed coming into this new regulation era of AlphaTauri. So he's definitely a driver that warrants a better drive, but also we saw at Red Bull he couldn't cope. So we kind of have to wait and see if he does move to another team in the future. Can he really spearhead them like we see him at AlphaTauri?
Yeah. And funny, Philip, this news has kind of coincided with another bit of sort of not fully confirmed news, but in the same press conference that Franz Tost did say about Pierre Gasly, Otmar Sasna has said that it looks like Oscar Piastri will have a drive in 2023. So does, you know, that's quite a big bit of news. Do you reckon Alpine? Do you reckon Williams? Aston Martin? There could be a few options open for him.
Yeah, the Oscar Piastri news going with Pierre Gasly too. I mean, for Gasly itself, I think he wanted to leave or wanted a better option. Unfortunately, at least next year, that's not going to be the case. So he stayed where he was comfortable. They need a lead dog at the AlphaTauri team because it's questionable what's going to happen with the second seat. So they kept a stable person there. It's not been their best year for them. They've not had a great car. You know, it's on and off, very inconsistent. But at least with Gasly, at least they have somebody who has experience, who has won a Grand Prix, who has been through the wars. In regards to Oscar Piastri, I mean, we've seen the rumors that it's possible that he might be on the grid here in a couple of weeks' time. The notion that Renault will make a connection with Williams again, which would in turn open up two more seats for them to go and have drivers, since they have plenty of drivers in their academy. Considering the guy who qualified on the outside Poland's had a great weekend so far, it makes it very difficult to believe that he's going to be getting replaced, which is one of the places where Gasly would have thought would have been an option. But in regards to Oscar Piastri's future, whether that's at Williams, at least initially, or Aston Martin, or of course the Alpine team, at least somebody who belongs on the grid is going to get on the grid. And that's the positive thing. We're getting to a point now where we're moving towards having people on the grid that actually belong. There's been plenty of news this weekend from certain segments of people that didn't belong on the grid and acting like they're really good, even though they're not really good at all. So when it comes to Oscar Piastri, he has to sit there and kind of take it on the chin. He sat there, he's done his thing, he's been quiet. He's biding his time, and he's going to be able to get into a Grand Prix seat, if not in the next couple of weeks, by next year. And he'll be out there getting the experience he needs to build up his obvious eventual future of trying to be the first be an Australian world champion, just like Alan Jones back in 1980.
Yeah, he is an incredible driver, and I think we're all looking forward to him being on the grid, hopefully next year. So, Tom, we'll actually move on to qualifying now and get in, onto the to what actually occurred. So, Max Verstappen takes pole. I mean, realistically, no one's going to touch him. He was absolutely flying through all three sessions. It would have been very surprising if any driver managed to catch him, given his biggest rival is also will be starting in the back of the grid. This is, you know, another huge step towards Max Verstappen extending that title, that championship gap over Leclerc, and securing himself, you know, in a very nice position in the championship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once we knew that Leclerc wasn't really going to be fighting for pole, because what's the point in putting sort of undue stress on any other parts of the car or risking binning it and costing the team more? You know, I know the position on the grid is one thing, but the financial implication, you know, if he'd have spaffed it into the wall or something at some point, you know, if he didn't need a new front wing, new suspension, whatever, in a cross gap here, you know, that's not going to be good enough when it's completely unnecessary risk. I mean, Max is just, I mean, any time that it looked like someone was getting even sort of remotely close to him, I'd look at the time and say, it's like, okay, the track is dried or rubbered in or combination of both towards the end of Q2. And then it was just, Max has gone quickest. He was driving like something possessed today. Some really, really, really stellar laps. We know how good he is in the wet, more, you know, most of the time anyway. And when he doesn't overdrive it, like he didn't today, he just did what he needed to do. When JP said it, you know, was saying, oh, you know, it's not a extraordinary or, you know, or a stellar perfect drive, whatever. It's like, nah, come on, mate. That was, he just looks. That was like man and machine at one today. And watching Max just, you know, just absolutely just like singing round, you know, just sending it just inch perfect pretty much everywhere. We didn't even see any sort of, you know, oversteer or car squirm or anything really. You know, obviously we weren't watching every single second, so, you know, I can't speak for that. But, you know, for every bit of every single lap he did. But yeah, you know, I mean, he's qualified, what, 6 tenths ahead of Alonso. And then the rest of the field is just, you know, he was a second up on pretty much everyone in Q2 alone. It's just like, yeah, it was a really mature qualifying from him. Just did what he needed to do, did it exceptionally well, and got out.
Yeah, it was a brilliant job, but the big news really, Jared, is the man who's going to be lined up alongside him tomorrow, Fernando Alonso. And just to put a bit of context on this, the last time Fernando put it on the front row was a German Grand Prix of 2012, and I was 11 years old. I was 11 years old the last time Fernando Alonso was on the front row, and here he is in Canada. Did a remarkable job. That Alpine looked very, very quick in the wet.
It did, and like the last time he was on the front row in 2012 was in similar conditions too at the German Grand Prix. I remember it very well. And it's actually good to see him actually qualify there this year, because we've seen glimpses of him and Alpine in general just have that pace and flashes of brilliance throughout the season, especially in qualifying. And it was Australia, wasn't it, where everyone was thinking he would have put it on pole before he binned it. So good for the Fountain of Youth to kind of validate that position. Will he send it on Max tomorrow remains to be seen. I think he's got nothing to lose in terms of where they are at the moment. But a solid haul of points, I think, on the table for Alpine. It's a track that offers a lot of overtaking, so I'm not sure in the context of things the likes of Leclerc and Perez, who are out of position, where they're going to end up. But we know how well Alonso can race. And, you know, qualifying was never his strong suit, even in his glory days. But, yeah, just seeing him up there, I think everyone liked that.
No, it was great. And as a Fernando Alonso fanboy, obviously, I was screaming. I was so happy to see Fernando at that. And honestly, we could see the greatest Fernando Alonso train tomorrow if he sends up the inside of Max. It could truly be an absolute masterclass. Philip, P3, Carlos Sainz. A solid job, considering he was really the only Ferrari that's going to be in the contention for tomorrow. But is he going to be slightly disappointed that he's not in the front row? Because he's the only Ferrari that really could take the fight to Max tomorrow. And now he's got an Alpine in front of him. If he doesn't clear Fernando quickly, it's going to be a tough job. We know what Fernando's like.
Yeah, it's something that when we look at what Carlos has done at times this year, he's been wildly inconsistent relative to what he's done in previous years. So, yeah, he wanted that front row start, gets a third place start. Who knows? Maybe there's something that happens on the front row. Maybe he can get a decent one. If he goes and has to be behind Fernando Alonso, if it's anything like Monaco, which, I mean, the difference is on this track, it's you can actually pass. He might be able to get by, but at that point, Max will be gone. Maximizing points for the constructors, trying to put yourself in a position to finish P2 is really what, for Carlos, that's what he has to do. I mean, because they're worried about reliability. They're worried about all kinds of things there. Leclerc, of course, is going to have all kinds of power unit components that are brand new coming from tailback. So his job is to go and kind of hold fort, understanding that Max likely goes and gets this win. Now, if he gets a great start and gets ahead of Max Verstappen, that opens up a whole bunch of stuff. Or if Fernando Alonso sends it and makes it really cool, then we actually have a real Grand Prix tomorrow. But it's something we'll find out. I think Carlos Sainz is just trying to go and get points, which has been an issue for him at times this year.
It certainly has been, and hopefully luck will favour his side, because otherwise Ferrari could be in real trouble again for the constructors. Tom, P4, Lewis Hamilton, and he's truly the king of Montreal. He's, you know, had so many poles here, so many wins here. And P4 in that Mercedes, I think he'll be very happy with that. I think it's a good position. And if the Alpine's pace isn't great tomorrow, and as you know, we've rightly mentioned already that this is a track that it can overtake, you know, a podium is definitely not off the question, off the cards for Lewis Hamilton tomorrow.
Yeah, it could be. I've got to be honest, I think the Alpine is going to have more than enough pace to stay ahead of him. And if I was Lewis, I'd maybe be looking over my shoulder a bit at maybe one of the Haas coming through, because that Merck, I don't know about his race pace. I know Merck have obviously had a lot of work this weekend on the issues around porpoising, and that's, you know, that's a whole different discussion in itself, which I'm not going to get into. I do wonder about Hamilton's race pace. Obviously, in terms of what he's capable of, we all know what he's capable of, and yeah, you know, I did roll my eyes when you said King Montreal, but he really is, to be fair. You know, I'm sure it was here in 2019 that he broke Senna's pole record, or it might have been 2018. I can't remember, but I remember him getting presented with the Senna helmet in the case. So, and I think if Hamilton had a car that wasn't porpoising and causing him as much discomfort as it is, I'd be backing him more to get his elbows out, probably squeeze signs out the way and get and get a podium. At one stage I did think, oh my god, is it going to be Lewis and Max on the front row again? You know, 2021 flashbacks intensified, but no, we weren't quite there. I don't, the Merck is ever going to be that high. But no, it was a good lap, and you know, he set himself up well for tomorrow. whether he can hold the race pace or whether he'll fall back, and whether he has to back off a bit due to porpoising. We will see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But it does look like the Mercedes has, you know, been better with the porpoising. I think it's just the bumpy nature of the Canada track, which is still, you know, causing those quite big leaps that we have seen, especially through the free practice. Jad, I'll come to you for both horses, considering they're going to be lined up alongside each other tomorrow. P5 for Kevin Magnussen, very impressive. And P6 for Mick Schumacher. I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question here, Jad. Is he going to get his first points tomorrow?
Oh, well, he has to, doesn't he? And I certainly hope that he does. They definitely turned it on in the wet qualifying, and it's nice to see that Mick had the confidence in these conditions, and also given the speculation and the talk about him over the last few races, his inconsistency as well. So to be able to put in a stellar performance this weekend, so he's done half of that obviously with qualifying, but if he can just, you know, nail it together in the race and score points, even if he loses a couple of positions, if points are points, and that's what he really needs at the moment, and that'll be his first points in F1. Is his first Q3 appearance as well, or his certainly his best qualifying result today. Magnussen as well, yeah, you know, gets the most out of the car all the time, and to be fifth and sixth, that's, you know, like 2018 or 2017 level Haas performance. So good to see that. But whether they'll stay up there, who knows? I mean, their race pace, I'm not sure if it's on par with those other midfield teams at the moment, or certainly they're probably on the lower end of that spectrum. But certainly they've delivered the goods in qualifying, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. We know how feisty Kevin is anyway, so he's not going to let anyone through in a hurry. I wouldn't be surprised if he's giving Hamilton the old hip and shoulder on the first couple of laps, and we'll see how Lewis manages with the bouncing issues he's had. But really good to see, and I lit up, my face lit up when I saw purple sectors from Mick Schumacher to get into Q3, and then also in Q3 he was on a good lap, and then eventually came down to finish sixth. So yeah, the great equalizer these conditions are, and it's good to see these names come forward.
Yeah, I was definitely happy, and I think a lot of people are going to be keeping their fingers crossed for tomorrow for Mick in the dry conditions. How quick is that house going to be? We don't really know, but the opportunity's there. He's got to go and take it. Philip, P7, Esteban Ocon. You know, I don't think there's all that much you can really complain about Ocon's performance. He got it in the top 10. Clearly just wasn't as fast as his teammate today, but otherwise a solid job. And it, you know, if he does well tomorrow, it's points for Alpine.
And they're in their own battle, essentially. I mean, McLaren and Alpine, I think, they have their battle. Mercedes is kind of in the woods, and then you have the top two. So for Ocon, he hasn't had anywhere near the pace of what Alonso has had this weekend, but if you can get a finish, you're likely going to finish in the points. Yeah, you're going to have Leclerc and you're going to have Perez coming, but if you do what you're supposed to do and just then keep it out of the wall, points finish for him. You see what Fred does. Likely it'll be a double points performance for them. And that hasn't happened very often this year. For a lot of the year, Fernando's had bad luck and Ocon's been able to kind of pick up the pieces. It's the roles are reversed here. Alonso's in a position to make something happen. But in the case of Ocon, just consolidate, and you know, we'll see what happens after that. I think for Alpine, they're looking more towards the British Grand Prix and the French Grand Prix here in a couple weeks' time, to where they may be able to do some further upgrades and progressions up the grid. But for Ocon, good enough, did what he had to do, go and hold up the fort while Alonso tries to battle up on the top end.
Yeah, it was very solid. And Tom, he is ahead of George Russell, who made the bold, I think very bold decision to go out on slick tires. There was a dry line in some parts of the track, but you look just turn one and two. It was still so wet. There were so many puddles, and we saw him then go, you know, colliding off into the barrier. You know, do you think he would have been further up had he stayed on the inters?
If he stayed on inters, absolutely, yeah. I think it's his Mick. We'd have seen him P4 in our Hamiltons. But alas, no, it was not to be for him. You know, he gave it a good go. You know, his decision to go to slick tires. Well, you know, that was bolder than the slick tire. And yeah, it was just never going to work out. You know, as soon as he was sort of tiptoeing, sorry, my cat is rubbing against my leg and I'm going to kick out the bloody window. You know, as soon as I saw him come out on softs and you just saw him tiptoeing around on that lap. As soon as he started that lap, you could see how it was squirming down that main straight. As soon as he entered turn one, the spray that came off those soft tyres, that looked like a lap that someone would do where they're saying we need to box for inters. I know there was a dry line forming, but there was too much standing water left on the circuit. And also the tyres just weren't warm enough, couldn't get the heat into them because the track was so damp. So, you know, yada, yada, yada. Just didn't quite work out for him. Ultimately, it wasn't too bad a damage for him. You know, P8, not horrendous, not a true representation of him, especially this season. And I have no doubt he'll end up in the top five tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a perfect record so far, and there's definitely space to go forward for George Russell. Then P9, Jarred for Daniel Ricciardo, top 10. He'll be happy that he's above Norris into that top 10. There is a chance for points tomorrow. Get another set of points after Baku. But yeah, the McLaren seems there or thereabouts this weekend. It didn't look particularly great in those wet conditions. Both Ricciardo and Norris weren't exactly setting the lap times a lot.
Yeah, well, overall, it was good to see Dan a lot more happier over the weekend, like on Friday in particular. So that might be encouraging in those dry conditions tomorrow. He seems to have got, you know, a better setup at the moment for this track to his teammates. So we'll see. I mean, that's the thing. He got points in Baku, not a lot of points, but points is points. Given his predicament, will he move forward tomorrow? I certainly hope so. He certainly knows how to deliver at this track in particular. Go back to 2014, his maiden win in F1 came here in the Red Bull. And, you know, it's all just about that confidence building. And, you know, this is a track where it is very Monza-like. And, you know, we saw him really excel last year at Monza when he got that win. So, yeah, definitely there is the potential to move forwards. And I certainly hope he could probably get as far as sixth or, you know, even a top five if he has a good start to the race and everything. But we know he has a tendency to just drop off. And then even in Baku, switched over to the medium tire, we all thought, wow, he's going to, you know, really have a good second stint and kind of just petered off towards the end of it to the point where his teammate was like, can I just get past so I can have a go at Alonso, which didn't end up happening. So, you know, it's a good base for him. And they'll be more happy, like you said, that the race is going to be dry tomorrow because that car really wasn't working well in the wet.
No, I think it's good to see Daniel doing better. Yeah, I think a lot of McLaren fans will be hopeful that the car in the dry conditions will have to push forward. Philip, we'll come to you about both Alfa Romeos as they're sat next to each other. Zhou Guanyu, brilliant lap in Q2 to get himself into Q3, starting in the top 10, and then Valtteri Bottas in P11. You know, Zhou Guanyu seemed to have hit a bit of a purple patch. You know, he had a great race. He was having a great race in Baku before his Ferrari engine did a Ferrari engine. Yeah. But, you know, we've got he's in the top 10, another good shout at points to get his first points, I believe. I don't think he's got points. I may have to be corrected on that one.
I think the first race at Bahrain, he got a point. Bottas finished sixth or something in that race. And that might be his only points. That we might have to correct. I think that was...
I will quickly check. Should I go on? You get 1 point. And that came.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, okay then. So then there's a chance for another set of points. You know, he has had a sort of string of bad luck and this car hasn't been exactly cooperating with him. So if things can stay good for him tomorrow, then, yeah, another chance for points.
Yeah, absolutely, Louis. I mean, you look at what Valtteri Bottas didn't even get much time of any in P2 yesterday. It's been quite an interesting run for them in regards to that side of the garage. Zhou, for what certain segments of the fan base want to say about him, he's done what he has to do. You know, relatively speaking, he's kept it clean. Yes, he's had his mistakes, but he's kept it clean. He's held his up his end of the bargain. And to be fair to him, he's still learning. This is a new circuit for him. Never been here before. To get a Q3 appearance in these conditions speaks a lot to his ability and his talent. And beating your teammate who has way more experience and has done great things in this sport too. So the way that things started for the Alpha Sauber team at the start of the weekend, you theoretically wouldn't have thought that Q3 or being right on the edge of Q3 in the case of Bottas was there. But in the end, you go and get a 10th and 11th. See what happens in regards to the race and dry conditions, knowing that you have two really fast cars behind you. You know, try to make something happen. Who knows? Maybe a safety car happens. You go and do some alternate strategies, and maybe you get a couple points out of it. This car and this team seems to be much better, but it's seemingly track specific. Which I think for a lot of the mid and lower midfield teams, that's the case. You're going to have certain tracks where you're going to be really, really good, and others where you're not going to be able to contend. So we'll see what happens with the Alfa Romeo team here tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that sort of comes hand in hand with the new regulations. You know, when you build a car, it's going to work for some tracks. It's not going to work for all of them. It takes until you've gone to all the tracks to really get a full understanding of the car. And yeah, for Alfa Romeo, they did a good job. Tom, P12, Alex Albon had a little excursion into the wall in Q2. Managed to, unlike other drivers, get his car out of the wall. But P12, which is definitely not awful for the Williams, given just how pitiful it tends to be in qualifying and in the race in general this season. But yeah, is there opportunities for him to go forward? We've seen him certainly come back from worse places.
Yeah. Aside from his little venture into the wall, I actually thought it was quite a good qualifying for Albon. I don't think he meant to mount the barriers where he did, but I think we can call that Canadian corner from now on, because I know Stoll had a venture off there, I think 2017 or 2018 with Brendan Hartley as well. He was close to Q3. I don't think he was ever quite going to get there because, like you said, the Williams isn't great in quali. If he gets a bit of luck tomorrow, if perhaps he gets a good launch while some others get a not so good launch, we might see him move up into the points. If the track dries out, I would imagine the Williams will fall backwards a bit. It was a good showing from him today. He is out driving and outperforming that car and indeed his teammate. And he's been on the cusp of Q3 a few times. He's obviously scored points at least twice this season, I believe. I'm fairly certain he's three times this season, but I may well be wrong, and I'm sure the internet will tell me. But it was a good performance from him today. The prang into the wall, much like the other ops that we saw today, you know, just didn't quite fire his tires up, and he locked going into, was it turn five, turn six? I'm never quite sure which one that is. Because turn four is the chicane where Perez obviously went off. So I think it is turn five coming down towards that hill. Well, I say hills, you know. I think anyway, point is that corner. You saw him going in, he just snatched at the brakes a bit, and it just, you know, as soon as you saw the tire lock, he was a passenger at that point. But he managed to decelerate the car enough that he only gave the wall, you know, instead of taking his wing off, he just gave it a little smooch. So it was it was good drive from him today. It'd be interesting to see what he can do tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. I was trying to think of the corners in Canada, because I forget that turn one, it's just that sort of kink. And it then goes on from there. I think maybe like turn seven or something, like even from where said it. But no, it's two previous points places, I believe, because you got 2 points in one race and then a tenth in another. I could also be corrected on that. But we'll swiftly move on before I sit here and think about Alex Albon's points too much. To Sergio Perez, Jared, and I think all you can really describe as disappointing. You know, he really did not look like he was going to make that corner. I think he should have maybe done what Carlos Sainz did and maybe bailed it down the escape road. But he hung in there, and unfortunately, then his front wing then hung into the barrier and he couldn't get out. So, it's going to be disappointing for Red Bull, considering that they knew that Leclerc is going to be at the back of the grid. They probably wanted both drivers at the front to get as much points as possible, but now he's going to have to fight back from 13th.
Yeah, and I think one positive thing that I found from that as well, I had to do a bit of digging, was that in 2012, when Perez got a podium in the Sauber, he started from 15th. So if he starts from 13th, there is a potential for him, especially with a strong race car, to come up. But he just did not seem very comfortable at all in qualifying. And like, as you said, just found the wall, and the front wing kind of dug into that Tech Pro barrier, and he couldn't even reverse out, because I think we had a couple of cars go off earlier in Q2. I think it was Sainz and Albon who were able to find reverse and get out of there, but it wasn't the case for Perez. But, we generally see the best of Checo on a Sunday anyway, so I feel like in that Red Bull, he could really put on a show from there and fight back to get into the points. But like you said, given the fact that Leclerc starting from the back of the grid, really it was a weekend for Red Bull to go for the jugular in terms of the constructors, and also for Perez as well, now that he's P2 in the championship, to pull out a bit of a gap on Leclerc so that George Russell can kind of put pressure on him as well, if Russell continues his excellent run of top five finishes. But yeah, I feel like we'll see some good overtakes from Perez tomorrow.
Yeah, if you're going to rely on anyone like to, you know, look after their tyres and make it to the end of the race and do a good strategy, then it's certainly going to be Sergio Perez. Philip, P14, Lando Norris. Not really much you can say about Norris. He scraped through in Q1 and then had a PU issue in Q2, which meant he couldn't really set much of a flying lap. And yeah, P14, it's definitely going to be a difficult race for him tomorrow.
He's had his moments this year and definitely been above Ricardo plenty of times. And the fact is, I guess the tides have turned a little bit here temporarily for Lando. I think there might be a little bit of hesitation in the rain that might have played a role in it too. Maybe he wasn't as confident in what he had in the car. We're talking about a guy that was about to go and win the pole at Spa a few months ago, and he binned it coming out of Eau Rouge. So if you're talking about one of the biggest corners there is in Formula One and trying to go and recover from that, who knows? But in regards to McLaren's situation, they're looking at Alpine. And, you know, I was talking about Ocon, you know, just trying to kind of hold fort. Well, Lando Norris's job is to get himself in position to produce something produce some sort of result. And that's where I guess the real interesting battle is going to happen on the second half of the top 10 and these guys that are going to be trying to rise up at the start of the race relative to whatever tire choices they make and whatnot. And who knows? Lando Norris has been known to make good overtakes. He's an aggressive guy. Maybe he makes something of the race tomorrow. If not, then it'll be an unfortunate performance. But you can't. I don't know why my phone went off. That's great. It just does that randomly. That's cute. But yeah, Lando, if he can go out there and do what he's capable of, points are on the table, even from the position he's in right now. But you never know. It's Canada. First time in a few years. The last time he was there, didn't go out, it go so well for him. Qualifying hasn't gone well. So at some point it has to turn. So let's see what happens tomorrow in the race.
It sounded like Siri was trying to forward her opinion on Lando Norris there. But you're right. It's going to be a tough race for Lando tomorrow. It's it is an easy track to overtake, but maybe that McLaren isn't the best at the moment. Tom, P15, Charles Leclerc, but he's not really P15 for Charles Leclerc. He only set a lap time purely to get, you know, the 107% rule to actually qualify for the race. He'll be starting at the back of the grid. Where do you see Charles, coming tomorrow? You know, he is in a competitive car. We do know that Ferrari's quick, and we know that Charles Leclerc is a great driver. It's a track that he can overtake. How far do you reckon he'll be able to get?
I'd be disappointed and or surprised if he wasn't back on the podium. Realistically speaking, he should be able to dispatch the majority of those midfield cars fairly quickly. I think where he may get unstuck is when he comes across Perez, although I would also expect Perez to do the same because they're in the two best cars on the grid. And a driver of Leclerc's caliber should not have that much of an issue getting past people on a circuit like Montreal. I'm not saying that he's going to do a full Hamilton Brazil 2021. Because we all know how just incredible that was. But I would expect him to. Leclerc. Now I would expect Leclerc to be able to move through the field with a degree of ease. He will probably meet resistance from the likes of George Russell, Hamilton as well. I would imagine will put up a decent fight, but I think he will in time, over the race, dispatch those two. Strategy is obviously going to play a part in it. We know what Ferrari and strategy are like. Not exactly a love story like Twilight, I wonder if they might go a bit aggressive, sort of get him through the field, build a bit of a buffer, get rid of a set of tyres that they need, then stick him on another set. Also, if we're going to have interchangeable weather tomorrow, or changeable weather conditions tomorrow, then there's really a possibility that, there could be something that happens. I don't know. We will see, but to sort of reiterate and round out what I've been waffling about, I would expect and almost anticipate Leclerc moving through the field back up towards the podium places.
Yeah. I mean, it's what we come to expect from Charles Leclerc, but let's just hope he doesn't reiterate his Monaco performance trying to come from the back of the grid and maybe cause a bit of chaos. P16, Pierre Gasly, from the highs of Baku to the lows of Canada, that AlphaTauri really is one inconsistent car. And, I feel like AlphaTauri would definitely be disappointed. When the conditions were as they were there, you'd hope that, you'd have a great chance of getting out of Q1. But just wasn't to be for, well, either of the AlphaTauris today, but Gasly probably will be very disappointed.
Yeah, there's always going to be winners and losers in that situation. And unfortunately for Pierre, that was the case. And also the driver that qualified behind him as well. I really don't see from where they are that they have the race pace to pull some points out of the bag. They will have to hope for some attrition ahead of them and maybe some safety car madness to move forward. But I think that's it, you know, for them. Like, you know, it's kind of funny talking about Pierre earlier on saying that, you know, he's staying on at AlphaTauri for another season. You know, let's celebrate that news with a pretty disappointing team and driver performance in qualifying. But yeah, hopefully they make up some positions in the race. I don't think they'll score points, either of those AlphaTauri cars, but yeah, they're just going to have to move on from this one and look forward to Silverstone.
Yeah, definitely is. It may be one to forget, considering we'll touch on Yuki Tsunoda later, but he will be starting the back of the grid regardless of whether you really qualified today. Philip, the de facto home race for Aston Martin. They may be a British team under a British license, but they are effectively owned by the Canadian mafia. And P16 for Sebastian Vettel, who was very angry over the radio with his performance. I think he was bitterly disappointed. And then Lance Stroll in his home race, putting it 17th. It's definitely not going to be you never know what could happen with Aston Martin, but realistically, I don't see them shifting from the back of the grid tomorrow.
Yeah, you get yourself buried in that spot. I mean, Vettel had pace yesterday, Louis. I mean, even Lance had pace. That tells you, you know, like, I guess you have to... The squirrel has to find a nut once in a while. I've said that multiple times on this show, so I'm just going to go with that again with Lance. But, you know, Vettel is a great rain driver too. So the fact is, if you gave him anything of value, not only does he get in a Q2, you give yourself a chance. You look at what happened in Q3. I mean, that's just crazy. It's unfortunate for him. I mean, their setup went down the pipeline like he has on his helmet, because it was just a disaster today for Aston Martin. Stroll F1, they've drove it right into the ground, and God bless them, they both figured out a way to fall out of Q1, and you're taking a four-time world champion with you. If they can, I don't know what they're going to do tomorrow, but fundamentally, if I'm Vettel, I'm like, this is nonsense. We had great pace in the dry. Theoretically, it's going to be a dry race. Overtaking is going to be there, but you've also got Leclerc behind you. You got Perez ahead of you. The math doesn't really work. I don't care what strat you have, and they're not known for having great strategy for their history. So in regards to Vettel, you know, move up into the top half of the bottom half of the grid, and then Stroll probably crashes into something or someone because that's what he's good at.
Yeah, I mean, well put. And Stroll won't be the only Canadian in the back, Tom. He is joined by his, fellow Canadian, who is actually from Montreal, so true home race for Nicholas Latifi. But he'll start P18 tomorrow. Despite qualifying 19th, which tends to be quite a familiar position for him.
I mean, where do we go from here? When your teammate's like knocking on the door at Q3, it's like, mate, come on. Just try not to be terrible. It seems like he's gone backwards, man. Honestly, like, Kat, can you stop it? Like, Sorry, she's just killed a fly. Good girl. The chief. Yeah, just. It's just. I'm running out of things. Well, no, I've already run out of things to say, which usually means you're going to have a Tom rant in a minute. He's just a pleb, honestly. He's just there. And we know why he's there. And with the, with like news around Oscar Piastri swirling and all the rest of it, he must be looking over his shoulder. I don't think he'll go before the end of the season. I think he's going to see his contract out. Because I do think Williams want to try and help him, but when Albon scored points twice, and you've got the grand sum of diddly and squat, it's just I know the car's not great, but it can't be that bad. So I don't know. Maybe he needs to put down the Lavazza coffee and have an espresso or something. Or maybe talk to Bottas about espresso on the grid. You're a psycho, honestly. I'm so sorry, my cat. I think it's the heat. He hasn't qualified higher than, I think, P16 all season. Or maybe even P17. And it's just like, it can't go on for much longer. He's a nice guy, if you don't get me wrong. And, he seems to get on well with his engineers and all the rest of it. But being a nice guy doesn't bring race results, which doesn't bring points, which doesn't bring constructive positions, which doesn't bring money, which doesn't bring success or happiness to anybody. I mean, he is on the F1 grid, and there are so many people who would kill to be in that position, and only a finite amount of people are worthy, or a very small selection of people are worthy of that position. I honestly don't feel that Latifi is one of those anymore. When he started in 2020, I thought, he's new, it's a big step from F2. The thing is, he was never anything special in F2. So, he was there for five seasons or so. He came second in 2019. That's because all the other competitions buggered off because they'd all won before they'd already come through. So, and it's not like he's 22. He's the same age. I think he's born the same year as me, 1994. So he's 27, pushing 28. He's not young. I mean, okay, yeah, he's better than Mazepin, but anybody's
low competition, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's just. I think with Latifi, obviously we saw him get a couple of points last year. He seemed to do okay last year at times, but he was also. But I think also his performances were maybe somewhat covered by the performances of the lack of performance by Mazepin, etc. last year. So I think now that the spot, I'm sure I've said this before, but now the spotlight is firmly on him and Stroll as the ones who have somewhat something to prove, especially given they've been in F1 for multiple years. His days are numbered. His time is up. He needs to go. I'm not saying boot him out before the end of the season because the team needs stability, even if that stability is an absolute, can't say that, driver. I'm getting better. He's going to be out by next year. Imagine if he went to McLaren to replace Danny Rick, because his dad's a shareholder there. That's sure as hell not going to happen. But going back to tomorrow, he's going to exist. And then he'll go back to his hotel, or he'll go back to his parents or something. I don't know. He'll be there. We're not going to notice. It's not going to be worth noticing because he's not going to do anything special.
This is true. When you mention McLaren, it's like, don't fill McLaren fans' heads full of nightmares to think that Latifi may go there. Just we hope that Zach Brown may have a bit higher standards when he comes to his hiring. But we'll move on to the very final driver, John, Yuki Tsunoda. qualified last, will start last. He has, I believe, a whole new, well, I don't know how many new engine parts now put into the back of his car. Yeah, I mean, he was going to start at the back anyway, so this qualifying really doesn't really mean all that much.
No, not at all. And I think it's a complete power unit change and reading that he's had, plus an extra exhaust component as well. Not that I knew that they were counting exhaust components now, but apparently they've got an allocation this season. I forget as well that Yuki is a Montreal rookie. So, like, the fact that we haven't had a Canadian Grand Prix for 2 years means that drivers have come and gone without having raced at certain circuits, like we were talking about earlier. But yeah, you know, what can you do when you know that you're already doomed to start at the back of the grid? As I said, with Gasly, I feel like it's going to be very difficult for AlphaTauri to score points. So just basically for someone like Yuki in particular, stay out of trouble. Please don't damage the car or that new power unit that they've taken on, and just look forward to the next race at Silverstone, which hopefully they do a bit better at.
Yeah, it's going to be it's just one who's going to probably aim to finish ahead of Latifi, which hopefully shouldn't be too difficult for young Yuki tomorrow. However, we've seen some questionable driving from Yuki in the past. So we've only got through all 20 drivers. It's now time for the beloved predictions. And yeah, I think we should also just sort of put a bit of a caveat that we don't quite know what the conditions are going to be tomorrow. They are supposedly meant to be dry, but we've seen some absolute thunderstorms happening in Canada. We don't know. We can never bank on the weatherman. But Tom, we'll start with you. And we'll have your podium. Who do you think is going to be on the podium for tomorrow?
Max, Sainz. No, I'm going to change that. Max, Leclerc, Alonso.
Ooh, fair enough. And John?
Let's go Max, Sainz, and Alonso.
Okay, two for two for Fernando. And Philip?
Yeah, Max wins. Carlos finishes second. And I'll say Lewis Hamilton finishes third at one of his best racetracks. So that might be my wild card thing. I might have already jumped the shark on that, but that's what I pick.
I'm sure we can probably come up with some bolder predictions than Hamilton. Personally, I'm going to go. I'm not going to break this cycle here, and I'm going to say Max to win the race. I'm going to go P2, Carlos Sainz, and then I'm going to go P3 of Sergio Perez. I think he may come up through the field and get himself on the podium. And now it's time for the bold predictions. Philip, if you want to stick with your current one, go for it. But otherwise, you feel free to change it. Tom, your bold prediction for tomorrow?
Both Canadians keep it at the wall and don't collide with each other.
That is bold.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah, no, I mean, which one is the first one in the world of champions?
we need another one at turn five called Wall of Canadians, and then that'll just be for those two. Moving on.
It's the wall that ended Olivier Panis's career, so you might as well make it the Wall of Canadians and French Canadians and whatever.
Anyway, Joe, your bold prediction.
Yeah, I was going to say a double Canadian DNF would be my bold prediction.
It's a bit too safe.
Is that bold?
I need to get one sometime, so.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I'm not going to go with the Lewis on the... I already did the Lewis on the podium, so I'm just going to go safe the way that George used to do. With talking about George Russell getting points, well, I'm going to go really bold. Even though he's in the top 10, Mick Schumacher is going to score points.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
That's more like it.
I'm doing it for Haas. I'm doing it for Haas as an American. Haas, we finally get Mick some points, so then people get off his back at least for a week or two, and then it'll go back to the regular scheduling program at Silverstone.
Fair enough. Going north, there you go, north of the border, and it's still some points for the American team. I have my standard bold prediction of Nicholas Latifi for points, and I'm going to back it. It's his home race. It's his home race. He's got to do it. It's a
very bold.
You can really tell you've been.
Is he driving the FW 14? Is he driving the FW 14 or FW 15?
He's got to try.
He can run around the track and he'll get a few points.
Well, if this is to be his last race, then there's that's good purpose for him to go out with some points. So
he could go out in the first corner and just go and bin it and call it a day and just walk back to his house and just really, really go out with a bang.
You know, jump start, go out and, go for it. Yeah. Just do something most people would do on the F1 game. Just absolutely send it into turn two.
Hope you're the best. Yeah, just like straight over the grass. It's like...
What do you mean? I haven't got the corner cutting.
Eat it, on. Yeah. Go and yeet it, and so you're not like TM at Marduk. Yeah, let's go and do it.
Yeah, I've got faith in I was about to say young Canadian, but he's not as young as most of the drivers on the grid. Anyway, so that is all from us today. If you are listening to the show live, thank you for currently joining us. We do live stream all of our shows on YouTube. So if you are listening to this afterwards, make sure to go to our YouTube channel, hit like and subscribe, and then also turn bell notifications on so you get uploaded. Notified every time we upload and every time that we go live. You can join and listen to this podcast being recorded early, and also ask us questions in the post show. And we're also available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Omni Studio, and Verbal, as well as the F1 Chronicle website. Just search for the F1 Chronicle podcast, and you can also check out the write-up for this session on the F1 Chronicle website as well. As previously mentioned at the start of the show, if you do give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'll give you a shout out on our next show, and you'll automatically be put into our prize pool to win a bit of F1 Grid Talk merch. So go for it, and any feedback and any ratings are always mostly appreciated. We have a huge back catalogue of shows, so if you're stuck for something to listen to between now, it's a late race for the UK viewers, so if you want to get into podcasting before the race, we have over 200 shows that you can listen to. We've got interviews with people like Mario Zola, or documentary-style shows like the ones on Tiregate and the 1994 Benetton Conspiracy. We also have a Patreon, so if you'd like to support the podcast and help towards better mics, lights, and recording equipment for all our hosts, any support is greatly appreciated. And you can also get yourself some official F1 merch at the f1chronicle.com/store, so check it out. I always forget to bring my mug. I always have my mug that I just never seem to show off. So we've got around the, my guests, and just let our viewers know where we can find more from you. So Tom, where can our listeners find more from you?
So if you want to listen or see anything to do with Everything F1, which is the team I'm a part of, you can find us at everythingf1.com. And we have our Everything F1 podcast, which is on all the aforementioned podcasting platforms. Usually goes out on a Wednesday or sometimes a Thursday, depending on editing, recording, etc. We have a good back catalogue, a plethora of good guests. With regards to socials, we are on all your major social media platforms, so Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, because we have young people. I think that basically all your favourite social platforms. The handle will be at Join the F1, or if you just search for Everything F1, you'll find us. If I haven't mentioned our website already, we have a website. If I have mentioned it, I'll mention it again. We have a website, everythingf1.com, where you can find our links to our podcast, race reviews. I've started a series of unpopular opinions. I've started one on overrated tracks, which I think may ruffle a few feathers in the F1 community. So if you want to find me personally, good luck. I deactivated my Facebook, so don't at me. Because I think I might need to go into hiding after I publish it.
No worries. Joe, where can we find more from you?
Yeah, so I host the Hit the Apex podcast on my own, record every week, every second week, depending on double headers and stuff like that. So you'll see me probably on Thursday with a Canadian Grand Prix review and also V8 Supercars here in Australia. They're on this weekend, so I'll be talking about that as well on this week's show. Find me on the Twitter account at Hit the Apex Media. There'll be a link tree as well with all the other relevant links that can be found on.
Cool. And Philip?
Yeah, you can find me and my co-host Josh Afine on the Gripster podcast, where anywhere you can find podcasts. I'm going to go and upload our latest episode on the audio side here shortly. The video is on YouTube, so Gripster Podcast on YouTube. You can go and see the show there. You can find me at Philip G. Matthew for my takes on motorsports, sports, and whatever else is on my mind there. At philipgmatthew.com is another place where you can find the show. One of these days, I'm going to get back to writing a little bit and post some things there, but be on the lookout for Tom and I's side project. That's going to be hilarious, because if this was any indication, considering the condition I'm in right now, I think our actual collaboration could be one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the history of the world. It will break social media or whatever algorithm you want to think about. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably going to break F1 Twitter. At least I'm
one. Bring it on. Bring it on. I'm looking forward to it, mate.
No, you can't wait for that. And then, as for me, you can follow me on Twitter. To be honest, you can't find me anywhere else on F1 because I'm literally just host this. So if you want to hear more from me, then you can follow me on Twitter, which is at L_G_Edwards on Twitter. If you want to hear my own views about F1, but that is all from us today. I do want to thank my guests for joining me. We'll be back with the race review at 10 p.m. British Summer Time tomorrow. But until then, stay safe and goodbye.